Well, China has reacted with fury that Australia and some other countries want an international investigation into the origins of the virus that's become a pandemic. It's politically very sensitive. But scientists say we need to know the origins of this catastrophe in detail to help us to prepare for or avoid future pandemics. So they are already on the hunt. You've doubtless heard that bats are the suspected original source of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. So on the bat question, I spoke to Alison Peel, who's a wildlife disease ecologist from Griffith University in Queensland with a special focus on bats.
Coronaviruses are a really diverse group of viruses present in birds and mammals, including people around the world. So the main focus, obviously, that we're talking about at the moment is this coronavirus that causes COVID-19 in people. And with this particular virus, it's really important we distinguish what we actually know about the origins of the virus versus what scientists like myself suspect might be the case based on the current evidence. So at the moment, we don't know the series of events that resulted in this virus emerging from an animal host into people, and we may never know. But because there are several closely related viruses in some bat species in China, the initial assumption has been that this recently emerged virus originated in bats. But there are also other wildlife species that have hardly been studied for coronaviruses in this region in particular, like pangolins is one of those examples. And recent work has also found that pangolins have some related viruses as well. But also I'll point out that that initial spillover event may have come from wildlife, but the spreading of the virus across the world is all down to people. SARS-CoV-2 is now a human virus, and it's people that have transmitted it from one to another and who are responsible, knowingly or not, for its global spread. And so bats are not playing a role in this global spread.
There have been a number of diseases traced back, though, to bat viruses that jumped to another animal, then to humans. And you study Hendra virus, which is a case in point, isn't it? What's the driver of the virus's leaping species in the first place?
So how we understand it is there are multiple layers of events that need to be satisfied for a virus to spill over from one species to another. And so a particular virus has to be present in the host species. It has to have the opportunity, the contact with new species to transmit to that new species. And that new species needs to be susceptible.
So humans are responsible for spreading the virus once it gets out there, but we're also facilitating the opportunity for the virus to have that spillover in the first place.
Absolutely. And that can come from a range of different ways, obviously the wildlife trade, but there's also a large impact of things like deforestation and habitat clearance, which is encroaching on wildlife populations. But a critical one is also their foraging habitat, what they're feeding on. And if we're taking away their native foraging habitat and their only opportunity for feeding during periods of lean time is in urban areas, then that's when we see animals like bats coming into closer contact with people as well.
Yeah, and urban and city dwellers, country town dwellers do get very exercised from time to time about the presence of bats and flying foxes roosting in their areas. There are often campaigns to drive the bats away. Are there any better ways to manage that clash once it's actually been set up?
So we're really trying to understand what's driving that that sort of movement into urban areas in the first place, so that we can address the cause of that at the source rather than just trying to reactively change our management of flying foxes once they're already in the urban areas.
And people do feel that the bats are somehow dangerous to them. Are they dangerous, given that we know they harbour a lot of viruses and seem to not suffer a great deal of disease from them?
Wild animals and people included, flying foxes carry viruses. People carry viruses that don't affect them all the time as well. And we're all, you know, walking around with viruses, whether we know it or not. So there's been a lot of focus on viruses in flying foxes because some of them do have the potential to cause serious disease in people. But the risk of them spreading those diseases on a day-to-day basis, particularly in somewhere like Australia, is extremely low.
And this week we've seen some reference to bats perhaps being a danger to koalas. And, of course, we know koalas suffer so greatly from habitat loss and from bushfires and so forth as well. What's the connection between the two species?
Okay, so flying foxes are really important for the survival of koalas in Australia. So flying foxes, like insects and birds, are pollinators of our native eucalypts. And without them, we wouldn't have the healthy forests that support species like koalas and provide all the other significant economic value of forests. And the important point is that flying foxes are different from other pollinators because their ability to travel large distances means that they can connect pockets of forest that are increasingly fragmented by development.
And Alison, when you handle bats, do you find them appealing?
These bats are just so adorable. If you have the opportunity to get up close to a bat or even just take a pair of binoculars to wherever your nearest bat roost is and have a look at their faces, take the time to observe them. Their faces are very much like puppies. A lot of bat carers would call them puppies of the sky. They appear to be quite intelligent creatures, particularly the pups in particular. If you just Google baby flying fox, you can't help but being won over.
Alison Peel, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks very much.
They are very cute. Alison Peel from Griffith University.